Thanks very much, Lawrence, and thanks, Sam, for having me here again today. So as Lawrence said, I'm going to talk about interest rate benchmarks, as there have been some important recent developments. Hang on a sec. Don't need that. So as you all probably know, these benchmarks are very much at the heart of the plumbing of the financial system, and they're widely referenced in most financial contracts. Many classes of derivative contracts generally are based on them, as are most asset-backed securities. So in light of the issues around LIBOR and other interest rate benchmarks, there's been a global reform effort under the auspices of the FSB over the last 3 or 4 years now to improve the functioning of interest rate benchmarks. So what I'm going to do today is focus on some domestic reforms around the main interest rate benchmark in Australia, which is BBSW. So I'll also briefly mention some plans underway to introduce a risk-free interest rate for the domestic market as a complement to BBSW. What I won't do is talk about the investigations that ASIC's currently undertaking into conduct around BBSW. So let me talk about the reforms that we're looking put out there in terms of BBSW. So as you may be aware, in recent months, the Council of Financial Regulators, which is ourselves, APRA, ASIC and Treasury, has been conducting a consultation on possible reforms to BBSW. So what I'm going to do is run through the motivation as to why we're doing that, outline the key issues that have come up in the consultation, and put forward some proposed reforms that we put out week before last for market participants to consider. So given its wide usage, ubiquitous usage basically, BBSW has been identified by ASIC as a financial benchmark of systemic importance in our market. So it's important that there is ongoing confidence in it. Without that, we have a serious problem, given its integral role in the infrastructure of domestic financial markets. So as you probably know, or may know, BBSW was calculated for a number of years, up until 2013, by each day asking a panel of banks to submit their assessment of where the market was trading in prime bank paper at a particular time of day, around about 10 o'clock. So while it was a calculation based on submissions from banks, it differed from LIBOR, in that BBSW submitters were asked about where the market for generic prime bank paper, which is roughly major bank paper, was actually trading that day. So it was based on a traded market rate. In contrast, LIBOR submitters were asked about where they thought their own bank's cost of funds was that day, regardless of whether any transactions went through that day or not. So BBSW submission based on where the market was trading, LIBOR, where you thought it might be trading for your own bank. So in response, back in 2013, we had a large number of people on the submission panel no longer being willing to provide submissions or saying that this was a bit they were about to pull out. So the calculation of BBSW was reformed in line with the recently released IOSCO Principles for Financial Benchmarks. So since September 2013, AFMA has calculated BBSW rates as the midpoint of the Nationally Observed Best Bid and Offer, or NBBO, for prime bank paper, which is basically bank-accepted bills and NCDs. So currently, as the prime banks are the four major Australian banks. Back in the day, there used to be a few more, but today it's only the four majors. So the rate set process uses live and executable bid and offer prices sourced from interbank trading platforms, which are currently ICAP, Tullett's and Yield Broker. So the bid and offers are sourced at three points in time around 10 a.m. each day. So they take three snapshots across those three platforms around 10 each day and then calculate BBSW based on NBBO. So the bids and offers that are posted on those three screens. So while the outstanding stock of bills and NCDs issued by the banks has increased to around $140 billion currently, trading activity during the rate set has declined over recent years to very low levels. In fact, as of now, there are quite a number of days where there is no turnover at all in the rate set. So there's bids and offers posted, no one hits them. So the low turnover in the interbank market raises the risk that market participants may at some point be less willing to use BBSW as a benchmark, and that's the motivation as to why we, the Council of Financial Regulators, decided to do this consultation process to ensure that BBSW remains a trusted, reliable and robust financial benchmark. So there's $140 billion worth of stock on issue. There's zero trading most days in the rate set. But there's considerably more activity in the market outside that rate set window, clearly. And the activity is also mainly occurring outside the interbank market. So given the size of the market, $140 billion, and the short maturity of these securities, so they're no more than 6 months, on average over $1 billion of stock is issued each day. And some data we've got from the four majors indicates that this issuance is actually pretty regular, so there's at least $100 million in NCDs bought or sold pretty much on every business day at 1, 3, and 6 month tenors. However, the non-bank participants that buy and sell NCDs tend to transact bilaterally with the issuing bank, with the price stuck at the yet-to-be-determined BBSW rather than at the directly negotiated rate. So I ring up a major and ask, I want to buy some of their paper, and I say it will be at BBSW before I know what either of us know what BBSW is. If these participants could actually be encouraged to buy and sell NCDs at outright yield, i.e. at a price or an interest rate, then these transactions would have the potential to make the BBS benchmark more robust. So consistent with there being a shift in trading activity to outside the interbank market, banks' holdings of NCDs have declined over recent years to below 20%. Over the same period, been a steady increase in holdings by super funds and the like, and their share of issuance is almost half. So we ran this consultation in towards the end of last year. We got 15 submissions back from a wide range of market participants, including the four majors, NCD investors, and people who use BBSW as a benchmark. Also spoken directly with market participants to better understand what has caused the decline in trading activity during the rate set and to discuss some potential solutions. And to bring all of this together, 2 weeks ago, we released a discussion paper for AFMA, who's the administrator of the benchmark, and market participants to consider, which summarises the views that we've got through this consultation process. So what do we find out? So most market participants share our concern about the low trading volumes during the rate set and acknowledge that changes to the BBSW methodology will be necessary. But before making any changes, it's crucial to understand why there is so little trading during the rate set. And four key reasons were put forward by market participants. First of all, institutions face a potential conflict of interest when they participate in the market underpinning a benchmark, as well as having exposure to a lot of products, particularly derivatives, that reference that benchmark. Many institutions state they are uncertain about how regulators expect these conflicts to be managed, and as a result, they are reluctant to trade during the rate set. Second, managers of money market funds are reluctant to trade at outright yields during the rate set, because they prefer to agree the volume of their bill transactions with a prime bank before 10 a.m. and set the rate after 10 a.m. at BBSW, because that minimises their tracking error against the benchmark. Third, investors subject to credit limits are reluctant to trade during the rate set when bills are traded as a homogenous asset class. So you trade in prime bank paper and you don't necessarily have control over which paper you're going to actually get delivered to you. So if you've got a credit limit which is already close to being used up and you get delivered a bank and run the risk of exhausting that credit limit, that creates a problem for you. And then finally, foreign bank branches, who used to be much larger participants in the market than they are now, have less demand for bank paper than in the past because it's not considered as a high-quality liquid asset under the LCR regime either here, but actually more importantly, in their home jurisdiction. So those are the four challenges we've got to deal with. And notwithstanding that, it's crucial that BBSW, as I said, remains a trusted, reliable and robust financial benchmark. So to ensure this, we've put together a proposal for the evolution of the methodology, taking into account the feedback we've got. So in putting forward this proposal, the key objectives are to ensure that BBSW is anchored to observable, arm's-length transactions in an active market. Secondly, that the BBSW calculation mechanism is robust to however the market may change going forward, or at least as far as we can got any sense of that. And thirdly, to make sure that the fundamental properties of BBSW are maintained to ensure a seamless transition for financial contracts as the methodology evolves. So while most participants are in favour of some changes to the methodology, there are many features of the existing methodology where there is a consensus that they should be retained. So in particular, the securities underlying BBSW, the general view is that they should remain the same. So as a result, we don't need to go down the path of calculating BBSW as a broader measure of banks' short-term wholesale funding costs, say, as is as is happening, or at least it's been considered, for LIBOR and Euribor. So the underlying reference product is going to remain the same. That avoids the risk of there being any significant change or any change potentially in the characteristics of BBSW, which leads to contract or could lead to contract frustration. To boost activity during the rate set, most submissions supported broadening the definition of the underlying market beyond the interbank market to include transactions with a wider range of counterparties, such as investment funds and the Treasury corporations. These submissions highlighted that there is much more activity in the market prior to the rate set than during the rate set activity, as I said earlier. This activity prior to the rate set, i.e. before between sort of 8:30 and 10 a.m, has the potential to underpin BBSW, assuming market participants actually agree to transact at directly negotiated rates rather than at BBSW. Given the much larger role that non-banks play in the market, we agree that it's time to widen the underlying market beyond the interbank market to include such counterparties. There is a risk that activity in the interbank market alone will not be sufficient to support calculating BBSW. Moreover, the credibility of the benchmark would be enhanced by the participation of counterparties that come from outside the banking sector. So the key change to the methodology proposed by many of these submissions was to calculate BBSW directly from market transactions rather than using NBBO. So that is calculating BBSW as the volume-weighted average price, or VWAP, of market transactions during the rate set window. And that's very much the proposition that we, the Council, support. So calculating a VWAP should be feasible for the 1, 3, and 6 month tenors, since these are the most liquid. The prime banks issue 3 and 6 month paper on almost a daily basis, and there is an active market in buying back 1 month NCDs. If there were to be insufficient transactions to calculate the VWAP at these tenors, NBBO was widely supported by market participants as the fallback methodology. There is probably not enough liquidity in the underlying market at 2s, 4s and 5s, and so we propose that those tenors be calculated by interpolation, explicitly by interpolation at least, from the more liquid tenors. They're already calculated basically by interpolation today. But our recommendation is to make that explicit. So while there was a solid support for calculating it as a VWAP, there was a wide range of views as to how the transactions during the rate set should actually be executed. So three methods were proposed in the consultation. Firstly, just continue with direct negotiation between prime banks and investors, with issuance and secondary market transactions being negotiated and executed in terms of outright yield, but most likely doing it the way it's done currently, which is over the phone. So a rate set window of around an hour to 90 minutes, so around about 8:30 to 10 a.m, should provide sufficient time for such transactions to take place. The second proposal was to do those trades on an electronic trading market rather than over the phone. So the transactions would be executed on the three platforms out there where the prime banks and investors post bids and offers in terms of outright yields for a particular prime bank's paper. A rate set window of around half an hour to 45 minutes or so should probably be sufficient for all the transactions to occur. The third proposition, which a few people put to us, was to have a tender process, with the issuance and secondary trading of each bank's paper taking place in terms of outright yield through an auction. So given that all the transactions would be executed at the same time, the rate set window in that world could be quite short. So each of these methods has its advantages and disadvantages. So conducting the transactions over the phone is clearly flexible and is the most similar to current market practice, so it wouldn't require too much changes to systems and procedures, but it would clearly be the least transparent, which may discourage participation from investors and necessitate more oversight of the conduct of market participants. An electronic trading market would also be able to facilitate a wide range of transactions while significantly improving market transparency. However, the platforms currently only serve mostly the interbank market, so other participants would need to change their systems to get connectivity to that. Finally, a tender would probably have the shortest rate set window, reducing basis risk for investors. But the design of the tender would probably be quite complex, because basically you'd have to have four simultaneous tenders in four across a range of tenors, and then you'd have to accommodate things such as switch trades, which are quite a common transaction in the market, where I buy my six-month paper and sell you back your one-month paper. So that complexity may lead some market participants to be reluctant to participate. So while none of these is clearly superior to the other in all dimensions, the market needs to coalesce around one of them to maximise the amount of activity during the rate set. To me, the methods involving trading on electronic platforms are the most attractive given the associated visibility and transparency that comes with trading across a platform. However, there may need to be a transition time to get those platforms up and running, which may involve transacting over a phone at an outright yield. So the two fundamental questions of having a VWAP calculation are, can you get enough V? So is the volume big enough? And can you get a P? So how do we get an actual price? And so the key challenge around that is to get investors to be more comfortable with transacting a significant share of their transactions at directly negotiated rates, rather than just at BBSW. Maintaining BBSW as a robust benchmark is clearly in everyone's best interests, including the banks, since many of their loan contracts reference BBSW, as well as the asset management super funds, since BBSW is their performance benchmark. So to some extent, we should be able to rely on the survival instincts of all market participants to encourage more activity during the rate set. So that's why we're proposing that the market convention should be for the banks to conduct their primary issuance and secondary market trading in terms of outright yields during the rate set window. Nevertheless, the current lack of trading activity during the rate set, which is only a couple of minutes at the moment, suggests that there may need to be more explicit incentives to encourage participation in the rate set, particularly to get a wider range of people to do so. Assuming the market shifts to trading on the electronic platforms, the improvements in market transparency that result may be enough to encourage more buy-side participation. However, some of the submissions said that might not be enough and suggested more onerous alternatives. For instance, one way to encourage investors to transact at outright yields would be for the banks to charge a discount for securities transacted at BBSW. So instead of getting it at BBSW, if you want to do it outside the rate set window, you'd get BBSW plus two. Alternatively, if the bulk of market activity continues to shift outside the rate set window, we can keep on widening the rate set window until eventually you've got 24 hours. That certainly ensures there's a fair amount of basis risk, clearly, and it's not an avenue we really want to go down, but it's something that's always sitting there in the background. So the key questions that we're left with are, how should we get the transactions executed during the rate set window for BBSW to be calculated as a VWAP? So how do we get enough V? And secondly, how are we going to get market participants willing to transact at directly negotiated prices, i.e. get a P? So these questions are the focus of our continuing discussions with AFMA and market participants. So while we, the Council, have an ongoing interest in BBSW, given its systemic importance to the financial system here, the ultimate responsibility for BBSW and the implementation of any changes resides with the administrator of the benchmark. So the Council appreciates that AFMA and market participants need to give the proposal we've put to them further consideration, and also it's going to take a bit of time potentially to implement, depending on what solution the market goes for. So as a result, it would be necessary for the current methodology to be maintained for a period. So we've put a timeline to AFMA, basically looking for them to come back to us with a set of proposals by the middle of the year, by June, and then for the changes to be implemented, depending on what they exactly are, by the end of the year. Though we do acknowledge that the feasibility of this timeline depends on how complicated or how large the amendments to the methodology that are eventually implemented. Finally, let me just talk a little bit about risk-free rates, which I've talked about a few times before. So one of the problems with BBSW is the wide range of stuff which references it, including stuff which doesn't really need to reference it. So in a number of instances, BBSW has become the default reference rate just because it's there, without much thought being given to it whether it is the most appropriate reference rate. So BBSW is a credit-based reference rate. It's got the bank's own credit risk in there. For a number of purposes, a credit-based rate is entirely appropriate. However, for other purposes, a rate that is closer to risk-free may be appropriate. For instance, in recent years, market participants have moved to using OIS rates more often when discounting the cash flows in their swaps. So the Financial Stability Board, through its Working Group on Benchmark Reform, is encouraging market participants to consider switching from credit-based reference rates like BBSW or LIBOR to risk-free rates. In the local market, AFMA's sounded out people about their interest about using risk-free rates. Such a rate could be backward-looking, like using the cash rate, or forward-looking, like using OIS. As a first step, some market participants have indicated that a total return index of the cash rate would be a useful backward-looking benchmark. Implementing this is pretty straightforward since we, the RBA, already calculate and publish the cash rate each day, and it's pretty easy for us to stick up a total return index which just compounds that on a daily basis. So we're going to continue to work with AFMA on the development of such a benchmark and should have one out there for people to use if they want sometime in the very near future. One example of a product where a change in reference rate could be contemplated is for FRNs issued by government agencies. So FRN coupons are typically priced at a spread to BBSW. So while referencing BBSW makes sense for FRNs issued by banks, it's less clear why governments or treasury corporations should tie their coupon payments to a measure of bank funding costs rather than something which is more closely aligned to a risk-free rate. That's one example worthy of consideration, and there are a number of others. It's not necessarily something you would have thought about, but at the very least, I'd encourage you to at least ask the question whether the product you are issuing or holding is using the most appropriate reference rate. It's not just using BBSW because it's by default. So let me finish up, and I realise that's somewhat dense, but interest rate benchmarks such as BBSW are very fundamental to the plumbing of the financial system here. Market participants need to have confidence in their robustness and integrity, and to help ensure that is the case and continues to be the case, the Council has undertaken a consultation process on the BBSW methodology. And we're working through AFMA, or the industry working through AFMA and together with us, will need to act on these proposals and act on them reasonably quickly to ensure that BBSW continues to be a trusted, reliable and robust financial benchmark. So let me finish there and happy to take questions that people might have on that. Thanks. So how are we doing this, Lawrence?
Yeah, we just like to give a couple of minutes for people who haven't sent a question in yet to send one in. There's one here, but there's a little bit of time left at the end of this session. So if you want to ask Guy anything, it's a good opportunity to put your hand up or text in a question. I'll start with the one that's here. How much, if any, compulsion is the Council of Regulators prepared to put into a benchmark system or setup?
No, I think we'll see how we go. I mean, we've put those proposals to people. We'll see if AFMA can come back with something which looks viable. That's always a fallback position. In the UK, LIBOR submitters are now compelled to put submissions. So it's an option. It's not an option. It's not our first choice, but we'll just see how we go.
Any questions from the floor?
Yep. Stanley.
How long away do you think you are from being able to produce your compounded index?
Tomorrow. I mean, the cash, we published the cash. I mean, we're actually pretty much ready to go. I don't know if it'll be tomorrow, but it'll be shortly. So we publish the cash rate every day. I think we're going to talk to AFMA about it this week. So imminent, you know, very, very shortly. I'm not sure literally tomorrow, but sometime in the next week or two, I think we should have it up there. As I said, it's a fairly straightforward calculation of something of just compounding the cash rate, which we already publish on a daily basis, and we're intending to get it up there sooner rather than later.
Okay, the questions are starting to come in now. I've got one from over here, and just while I get a microphone over there, I'll ask this next one from the audience. On the issue of risk-free benchmarks, what is your view on swap spreads falling below bond rates and the potential impact?
I'm not sure there is any rule of finance which says that they have to trade at a premium to bond rate. I mean, they're different products, so I'm not sure that one has to be always above the other. I mean, swap spreads have been impacted by a number of increased costs of holding particular products on bank balance sheets. They've been affected by rises in repo rates and the like, and the increased cost of doing that. So they just seem to me there are two things which are different prices and they're affected by different things. So I don't think there's any, as I said, God-given law of finance which says that swap spreads always have to trade as a premium to bond rates. So I just see them as they're reflecting different dynamics in different markets. Now one happens to be below the other. I don't see any particular bad consequences which come from that. It just reflects the difference in market structure today.
In relation to transparency of where bills are trading and ultimately getting a more transparent BBSW, have you thought about an exchange or some type of network where everyone can access or at least see where bids and offers are, and it actually shows you the depth of the market based on pricing and volumes, basically like a futures market?
Yeah,
that way so, it's all very clear.
Yeah, I mean, so that's potentially an option that, I mean, the electronic trading platform, which I was talking about, or platforms, because they're using the three of them which are out there at the moment, could very easily put up a structure exactly like what you're talking about. And that may well be what AFMA comes back with. So I think that's very much one of the propositions which would be out there, which would be able to see where the transactions are taking place, but potentially also the depth in the market as well at the same time. So yes, I think that certainly should be something which is under consideration.
Did I see there was a question over there, or was I imagining that?
I don't know.
I was imagining it. Okay. We've got a couple more off-topic ones, Guy, as always. I'll ask them. How would a Brexit affect global financial markets?
Don't know. It's something else for financial markets to worry about. I think it's more likely to have an effect on the political aspirations of Cameron and Johnson as much as anything else. But I don't know. So that's, as I said, it's just another thing for everyone to worry about over the next 4 months. But I'm sure we'll be, it'll become clearer. Hopefully the polls will be a little more accurate than they were before the Scottish referendum.
Okay, thanks, Guy. And another off-topic, should low-income households be able to opt out of compulsory super contributions?
No, that's way off my topic too, so I'm not going to answer that one.
I just ask them, okay. okay, so anything else from the audience? I'm through on what's come in via SMS. Okay, well, in that case, I'd like to say thank you, as always, to Guy Debelle for making himself available to speak at this event. I'm sure everyone would like to thank him. Join me in thanking him. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Lawrence.